Edison Hatter here with this week's episode of the Harness Players Podcast. It's the second week in May, also known as a little bit of the quieter week on really both sides of the world. Obviously, last week, Thoroughbred Side Kentucky Derby. Next week, the Preakness and the Harness side of things. The Graduate Series got underway at the Meadowlands last week, some of those stakes series. Obviously, we had the first major race over in Sweden. End of the month, we're going to have Elite Lop and more of Grand Circuit stakes action. So this is kind of that quieter week. So I bring Mike Probosi in now to discuss several odds and ends with me as we start this show. Mike, welcome as always.
Gracias. Yeah, quieter week. That week between the Derby and the Preakness, it seems to go very quickly because you have the hype from the Derby and you know the lead up to the Preakness. So in racing, it's still a lot of buzz going on for harness racing. You know, we're sort of along for the ride right now, but it's a good ride. And I think we should, attach onto this sort of, times in racing as much as possible and just get as much eyes on the sport as we can.
So let's see, Mike, a lot of things we can discuss. I suppose since we are a harness player show, we should stick to that side for the most part, but we're going to take a slight take back to the Derby just because, you know, we're all players. I'm sure most people listening to this are probably Thoroughbred fans too. I need it Forever Young. You knew that. I've been on that horse forever, so I lose my three-way photo. Maybe interference, maybe not. Who knows what. But, hey, you know, I'll tell you who I'm sure you saw on social media who we have to send our condolences to. How about Howard Kravitz, friend of the show? How about the awful beat he took with Sierra Leone?
Yeah, they had a big future bet on Sierra Leone, and I think it was netting them over $100,000. Because they bet him very early in the game, and to get beat an inch like that, although he might have had to survive an inquiry, I'm very curious what would have happened had his number been hung up first, because the horse was getting in the stretch, lots of things going on in that stretch drive, and it would have made things very interesting had he won the photo. He didn't, and that's it. That's a tough beat though, to have a horse like that and come that close. It's that probably never happens again. Them.
Yeah, that is some great handicapping for them and just a brutal, brutal beat. And we won't belabor the point. I know everybody on social media has had their takes with it all and everything, but I really do question if the Japanese rider, you know, the connections, if they were maybe unfamiliar with the inquiry process objection. I'm just kind of intrigued by that whole concept, but it seemed like coming out of it, you know, in interviews, they were saying that, you know, they were content with it and it was race riding. But again, I just kind of think that's the Japanese way, right? That they're never going to be like we are and sometimes in American sports and quickly point a finger and blame and whatever and bad calls and this, that, the other. So I don't know. I'm so intrigued by that.
Yeah, I think different culture, different process over there. I don't know if they were just happy to be here kind of thing. They just, you know, took it as it was. I don't know. I do think that there was some contact both ways. So, I mean, it wasn't so egregious that you couldn't kind of make a case that probably could be left alone. And in a big race like that, I don't know. I think things probably should be left alone more than they're not. But definitely a case to hang an inquiry. And I don't know. Had that have been American jockey on that horse, I do think maybe something would have come of it, really.
Well, Mike, back to the harness side of things, and particularly this show. So for those listening in, this is a little bit of a quieter week. Again, you and I just kind of chit-chatting here a couple minutes, talking a couple different things. The major thing we're going to discuss is the Elite Lop and talking about some of the races that UI and Thomas previewed from last weekend. But in general, this is going to be a quiet week, a little bit of Swedish prep. You're going to have a stable segment on the back end of this. But, Mike, we got a lot to look forward to coming up. We've got Caesars deals in place. We've got some stuff coming up with the Hamiltonian Society later down the summer. We've got hopefully some more Yonkers coverage coming down the line. We've got Wood by Mohawk coverage starting. So we do have a lot of things coming up if this is a bit of a quiet week.
Yeah, it's a weekly show now, and we've been going strong since February. And lots of great racing. Typically, we have handicapping segments. Not so much this week. So if you're here for, you know, for some handicapping advice, maybe not the week for that, but lots of good things to offer. We've had plenty of things from the stable so far. That's been an excellent partnership. If you're looking for horses this week, check out the Harness Players newsletter that's out every Friday, and we have plenty of nice spot play winners there from lots of different handicappers, lots of good info there, lots of big winners that we've been giving out every week. So if you're not subscribed to that, InTheMoneyPodcast.com/harness will get you that Harness Players newsletter every Friday morning. And like you said, the Hoosier big races this summer. We got some Meadows that is going to come into play. Hamiltonian Society is going to bring some of their Grand Circuit things to the airwaves here. So we have a lot planned for you all the way through the Breeders' Crown. So stick with us every week. Check out the stable too. A lot of these stable segments are a lot of fun. There's people that are interested in racing, getting that ownership experience, and no better way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Definitely a lot of great things coming up here for us. And yeah, the stable stuff has been particularly interesting to follow along. Obviously, a lot of great work that they do with the ownership side of things. And definitely a great opportunity to get involved with it. And obviously, we've had a lot of great segment with owners. And I know you've got one coming up here later later after the end of this show. So we'll hear some more from the stable stuff. But the thing we'll wrap up with here before I'll slip out of the way and let you get to that stable content is some of the Elite Lop stuff. So you, me, and Thomas were on last week. The big race that we handicapped, we previewed, and I'll braggadociously say I picked the winner of, and I was very happy to get 3-1 on. Onas Prince has secured his ticket to the Elite Lop. He's been there before. Per Nordstrom obviously has experience with the race. And, you know, Mike, you know, it's always interesting when a horse like Onas Prince gets in there because he knows one way. He's probably the fastest horse anywhere in the universe off of the gate. So you know exactly what he's going to bring to an elimination, to the final, to whatever he gets into with Elite Lop.
Very quick and just dominated that race from start to finish. Really never looked a loser. Just took it to him early and late. I liked Kentucky River in that race. We did mention that horse. And a bit of a troubled trip, but was game to the wire there to be second. Some of the other horses that we talked about in there, Benjurian Jet, and that horse was kind of, you know, even fourth in the race as the favorite. So I'm sure another one from Gucci Doro, who's extremely hot right now, that'll be back and be able to hang at that top level. But certainly the winner looks sharp, and it's only a couple weeks away now. So if he can maintain that speed, he's going to be an interesting problem, I think, for a lot of these horses going into the big race.
The other one that race, so I keep forgetting, we recorded last Tuesday with Thomas, which means that Wednesday, the day after, was the win in race at Solvalla. And I keep forgetting that obviously we didn't have the official results of that race when we last recorded, but Don Finucci Zet was in that race, I believe, $1.04, so a 1-25, 1-50 favorite, whatever it is. So yeah, he took care of business. Don Finucci Zet will get his way into the Elite Lop, and as we know, Mike, obviously things we'll discuss in the future weeks on the show, but Elite Lop, very different. You can only drive one horse in the eliminations. Even if there's two divisions, only one horse. So, Ian Keelstrom, I think Francesco Zet is probably the pick, but it will leave a drive open.
Yeah, and a very live one at that. And you said, what was he paid $2.04. Well, you can't get that in a savings account. Oh, maybe you can right now, but that's about how big of a favorite that he was in that race. I like how they structure this with the drivers, especially given the eliminations, that you have to pick a horse. And you know, you don't get any shenanigans. You don't get guys like trying to just, oh, we're going to get in the final here. Oh, we're going to, you know, try to you know, race for a spot and things like that. You got one shot, you got one horse, pick it, go with your best. And it's very different than the way we do things over here with these eliminations. They mean a lot more. And another reason why you should be interested in a lot of these Swedish races. If you're not, if you've never been on there, jump on, especially Elite Lops. That's the perfect weekend to start to get yourself and familiarize yourself. And I think you're going over, correct?
Absolutely, yep. I'll be on a plane in less than 2 weeks now, and the Elite Lop is less than 3 weeks away, so it all comes up on us very quickly here. But, you know, Mike, all of Scandinavia has great racing, and that includes Finland, where, of course, we saw the Finlandia race on Sunday morning. I watched it on a plane on the way to Cleveland to watch my Orlando Magic get killed. That's another whole story. But the Finlandia race stole the show, was able to defeat Hail Mary. Hail Mary, the favorite, wasn't able to get it done, but stole the show. Possibly back on his way to the Elite Lop, but obviously this horse should be familiar to American listeners, as Dexter Dunn was invited by those connections to go drive the horse last year.
Yeah, he was in last year, and he was respectable, and maybe just a little bit behind the top ones, but the fact that Dexter showed up over there and raced well, that's something that just gets more eyes on the sport. And Hail Mary, obviously very nice horse also. If you follow these races last year, you saw that horse race at that top level, and a ton of speed for that one. So another one, I think, that these are top-class horses, and Stole the Show could be coming in a little bit sharper than last year. I'm curious who will get the drive. Will Dexter come this year?
And Mike, just to wrap up here, you know, last week, I think I obviously teed up this Francesco Zet on the 22 race win streak now, I believe is correct, versus Adal de Tallard, the impressive Prix de Marique winner. So that's the French-Sweden matchup this year. But there's a couple names we didn't even mention on the show last time out that are going to be there, including Honeck, last year's champion, of course, with Gabriel Gallarmini, and Go On Boy, who was dead heated for second last year, as you recall, with San Mateur. San Mateur, unfortunately, sidelined, of course, will not be here this year, but that is the first and dead heated second place finisher from last year coming back as well. So it really is shaping up to be a phenomenal field.
Yeah, and Honeck showed up last year at the International Trot. So a lot of these horses are coming to the big spots, and it's going to be a great race. I'm very excited for all these big horses coming in. And you know everybody's trying. I mean, this is the absolute pinnacle of the sport. So, you know, everybody's getting their top guns moving in, and it should be interesting. It's must-see TV as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, that's another fun component, Mike, with us doing international trot coverage, hopefully, this year for Yonkers. Obviously, that's another race where we see some of these international horses come over, and that's when they really do get to take on some of our American horses. Obviously, we saw Jiggy Jog be second last year in that big race. So that's another great piece of this Swedish coverage this year with, hopefully, Yonkers in the mix will be to kind of follow this whole roller coaster the whole way through to see how these Scandinavian horses do throughout their seasons.
Yeah, and when they come over here, you have to look at them because they are, I think, a class above the U.S. trotters. There's really not really much of a question about it. There's a reason why we really don't send much from here over there to race because the horses are a little bit behind, I think. So when they come over here, it's a lot of fun just to see, you know, how they're able to dominate some of our better horses. It makes it fun, and it makes me want to follow these horses even more because of the class, because of the prestige that this brings. If you get into it, believe me, you'll see how good these horses are.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Obviously, a lot more excitement to come up. And next week on the show, hopefully, we'll get to Thomas Fenson back, you and I back. Obviously, then we got plenty more Elite Lop coverage coming up Elite Lop Week. And now a lot of that will come from me on site over there in Sweden. So definitely looking forward to that. So definitely stick around. Join us for a lot more coverage on the ATG and Swedish major races side of things. But for now, Mike, I'll go on and slip out of here. We'll hand it off to you. And you've got this week's stable segment to wrap us up.
And we're back. Nahu Mikey P, Mike Probosi back, and another stable segment right now. And we have the director of marketing and communications for the stable, and it's Kelly Spencer with us here. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
And I know you're very involved in the stable. I communicate with you on a regular basis here when it comes to just developing different things, how we're presenting. You know, you're in charge of the marketing, so how we're presenting in the newsletter, how we're presenting on the podcast. But I want to talk about you a little bit and how you came to work with the stable, how you got involved with Anthony. So let's hear a little bit about you before we get into the stable stuff.
Okay. Much to the chagrin of your listeners, I'm sure. So I came to harness racing without any harness racing or horse knowledge whatsoever. I just kind of stumbled into my first job, which was at Elmira Raceway, which is the predecessor of Grand River Raceway, which is in Elora, Ontario. And so I just kind of fell into that role. I had literally never even touched a horse before. So it was kind of like drinking from a fire hose. I had to learn a lot very quickly. But I was young and able to do that, so it was great. I worked there for many years. We built a new track in Elora, which was, you know, a really great experience to be part of that. And I worked there for another 20 years, and I left there in 2018. During my time there, I was the director of marketing communications, and I also would oversee the broadcast department, take care of all the events. It's really, when you work at a small track like that, it's lovely because you really get to have your hands in everything and get a lot of experience and a lot of exposure to all elements of racing. So it was a great learning experience, and I'm very blessed to I've had that as part of my career. So in 2019, I left to create my own marketing agency, True Nature Communications, and AnthonyandTheStable.ca is one of my clients. I've been involved with Anthony, though, and Amy since they began The Stable. I actually helped Anthony campaign during his fraught and ultimate losing political campaign, which ultimately resulted in the creation of Stable.ca. So the three of us have been friends for a long time. In 2011, I think, I had created sort of a side gig. I had created a harness racing short documentary, of which I asked Anthony to be a part of because, of course, he is such a great showman. And from there, our friendship really, really sparked. So I've been part of Stable.ca sort of since its inception, more heavily so since 2019 when I started my own agency. But I've really seen it grow from the ground up and had all of those early conversations with Anthony. And it's been just an extraordinary, really extraordinary experience to see it come to, you know, to be what it is today, this enormous multi-million dollar entity that, you know, has nearly 1,000 clients in 15 countries and always between 100 and 150 horses in the stable at any time. You know, it's really a testament to him and Amy's perseverance. He is, I think, probably the most bullheaded person I've ever met in my entire life, and he is charming and lovely. He's both of those things, but he is also, you know, he has all of the attributes of any triumphant entrepreneur, and that is that you just can't keep him down. He just persists no matter what, which is absolutely what it has taken over the years. And Amy is his, you know, Amy is his right-hand man and keeps everything afloat. So I'm extraordinarily glad to be a part of it from the beginning through now. And it's really, truly something special. It is a really special entity. We're all very proud of it. And the clients are just really some of the nicest people I've ever met. So it's great. It's really fabulous.
Well, you've been there from the beginning, you say. So obviously you've seen the evolution of it. Now the constant obviously has been the McDonald's, but talk about the evolution of the stable from just when you really started to get involved to really what it is today.
Yeah, I think, so when I became really involved in 2018, or 2019 on a like really permanent basis, you know, I don't remember how many clients we had back then, probably around, I don't know, 200 or 300 maybe. And so once you hit a certain threshold, you know, then you start to scale. This is the same with any business. It doesn't matter what kind, you know, whether it's a tech startup or whatever. You hit like a certain point where you have to start to scale and you have to, you know, implement new systems and, you know, sort of get away from paper and get more digital. And so I think where we've been really lucky is that we've been able to implement systems that help us to scale. That's definitely been, honestly, you know, I can't speak to any of the horse side because that is, you know, that is not my, that's not my thing. I'm not a horse person. I don't have, you know, any knowledge of training the horses or anything, but the other side of it, I certainly do. And we've been really fortunate that we had some good systems in place right from the get-go when we started to scale, because then the thing really just really ballooned. And just the sheer volume of, you think about all of the information attached to each horse, all of the bills for a horse, you know, all of the client's information. So we've been really lucky in that regard. And, you know, and we tried a lot of things that didn't work. We've had a lot of stumbles along the way, but it's been a real learning experience. And, you know, I think the big thing for Anthony and Amy and I think, you know, we were really, I remember we kind of all looked at each other one day and we said, you know, like, wow, this means something to people in a way that we didn't anticipate. And what I mean by that is, you know, we talk a lot when we're promoting harness racing about, you know, what the value of harness racing is. You know, it's the thrill of the finish. It's, you know, the thundering hooves. I always like to say it's the thundering hooves, it's the adrenaline, etc. But when, certainly fascinating from a marketing perspective, when you start to listen to people in their own language tell you what the value is in the stable, and the value for a lot of people in the stable, which we did not anticipate, is the sense of community that they get from the stable. So it's the experience of meeting other clients in the stable, whether that's, you know, in person or virtually, just because they're connected. You know, if they own the same horse, they're maybe attending the same races, they're posting threads on the same social media posts about their horse, you know, and they form a bit of a community where they get to know each other, which we didn't really anticipate. And I think just as importantly, it formed this sense of community and togetherness and inspires these really rich relationship builders within people's own community. So what I mean by that is, you know, I can't tell you how many emails I've received from people with this storyline. I bought 1% of this horse. My dad and I, you know, this is something that we have in common. We used to go to the track together when I was a kid, but, you know, we were never really close. Now he's older. This is something that he really looks forward to. He loves watching Anthony's videos. He watches all of them. We watch them together, and we watch all the horses' races together, and it's something we talk about all the time, and it brought us so much closer together. Or, you know, my whole extended family, we sit down and watch the horse race together, or we make an outing of it to go to the track, and it's something we talk about all the time. It's really brought us close together. And I hear that stuff, and Anthony hears it more than I do, I'm sure, all the time. So this has real impact on people's lives. It is, of course, delivering entertainment and all the things around that, but it is actually providing a really meaningful experience, which, you know, we could have never anticipated that when they started this.
It's almost like everybody's rooting for the same team, and you know, you see fans of different, the fan of a baseball team together, and everybody kind of gets together and roots for the same team. And I do think that there's a lot of that with the stable, that everybody's rooting for the team, and Anthony is the coach, and he's putting out his videos. Yeah. Like every week. And he's talking about the different players and updating everybody on what's going on with the team. So that kind of thing. I'm sure that maybe when you started this, that wasn't probably something that you thought would happen, but it certainly has happened, because the people that I've spoken to give me similar stories to what you're talking about here, for sure.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Mike. And yes, certainly your interview with Laura Brower, you know, she drove home a lot of those same points. For her, even a step, you know, further, it's really an experience that has, you know, brought her closer to her brother, you know, and to her brother's memory, which, you know, is so special.
That was one of the most, the favorite things I've done, was that podcast with her and just her passion. And we're definitely going to get her on again, just because something like that is so genuine, and it just you can't fake that at all whatsoever. And hearing her and her story into racing, and the fact that, you know, she was trying to honor her brother by getting, you know, involved in racing, and the way that the stable has cultivated that is just something that I think that a lot of people will be talking about for a long time.
Yeah. So imagine, you know, we get that kind of energy all the time I mean, that's the upside of this, right? Is that we get that kind of energy and feedback all the time. Now, of course, it's horse racing, so we get some of the other too. But I mean, but that comes with anything. That comes with any business. But that's really, you know, that's what makes it so special. We have one client who he's been here from the very beginning. I think he's one of the very first handful of clients that Anthony had. I don't know how he acquired him. I don't know the whole backstory. But anyways, he keeps track. He keeps meticulous track on a spreadsheet of the results of every horse that he's ever had. And every 50 wins, he updates me. So I'll get an email from him. And I think the most recent email I had from him was, I'm at 300 wins since I started.
That's crazy.
With the stable.
We need to get him on too.
I know. Yes. So there's a lot of that. It's really there's so many great stories, right? Which is fabulous. It's we talk a lot in marketing horse racing about, you know, how we need to tell these stories. There's so many great stories out there about the horses and the people connected to them. We need to tell more of them. And I agree. I mean, storytelling that's my career. But this proves that, you know, once you charm them with your stories, then you need to have an actual vehicle there to bring them along. So once you've determined that this is a world they'd like to be a part of, then you need a way to get them in. You need somewhere to put them, to push them along to, so they can actually become involved, which is the power of fractional ownership, because the barriers to entry are so low. We've eliminated or made them as low as possible. And so it's as easy as it possibly can be for someone to get involved with, you know, low risk, low work. It's just a fabulous model.
And you talked about the vehicle. You expand on that, because I know you want to discuss the fractional ownership model and how this model can benefit the industry overall. So expand on that a little bit. Expand on what you guys are doing to be able to get more people involved, especially the everyman person. I know Anthony, he wants the everyman involved with the model. So expand a little bit on that.
Yeah, one of the biggest difficulties with horse racing, you know, it has a lot of difficulties when you're talking about marketing and basic knowledge of the sport. You know, it's a niche sport. It's a huge industry internally, but globally, it's a niche sport. And unfortunately, it doesn't have the appeal in the mainstream anymore that it once did. Obviously, you know, not so long ago, horses were a huge part of all of our lives, right? We depended on them for so many things. And then really, in terms of the big timeline, it's really just recently that we've not needed them at all. So so this kind of represents, horse racing kind of represents the last real display of interconnectedness between horse and man. I mean, really, in this increasingly digital world, this is one of those last analog relationships. And so, you know, people are growing up, not as much as I did, growing up having never touched or seen a horse and not really understanding a horse's place in the world. So it's difficult to reach people. But once you do reach them, you know, you just have to have somewhere for them to sign on. And you just think about it practically. A person is just not going to walk into the paddock. You want to buy a horse. You decide you want to become involved. You don't have any connections to the horse world. How do you ever become involved? You don't walk into the paddock and eye up the first trainer you see and say, I'd like to get involved. How do I get involved? People just don't do that. So these mechanisms have to be in place. It's great when we promote these stories, when we spend a lot of money promoting stories to people to, quote unquote, bring in new fans. But if you don't have a way for them to actually become involved, then, you know, I think you've wasted that effort. And so fractional ownership, you know, frankly, it's the hope of Anthony and I that we have some competition with Disabled.ca. You know, we would love to see more fractional ownership stables. They don't all have to operate exactly as Disabled.ca does, but this is a model that works. I mean, we moan and gripe all the time in the horse racing world that, you know, everything is on the decline and we just can't get new owners, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, here is a model, you know, it's taken almost 10 years to get it to the point where it is. So it's not overnight success, but it works. It absolutely 100% works. It gets new people involved. And by new, I mean people that either haven't been owners for a long time or are completely new. And it gives them a really meaningful experience. And they spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of money in terms of the expenditures that one spends around horse racing. So mostly agricultural expenditures, you know, or goods and services related to a horse. You know, someone has to fund those. Those come from owner. And we spend a lot of them. We have about $60 million in expenditures through the stable.ca since 2017. So that's how much money we've pumped out, you know, through the owning of our horses, to race them, to feed them, to, I almost said to clothe them, but to, you know, to take care of them. Yeah, $60 million being pumped into the economy from this one stable. And that doesn't include the actual acquisition of the horses. These are just all the goods and services around them. So then think about the benefit to the racetrack. And I'll tell you something. I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, because during a meeting some time ago with some horse racing people, we were talking about licensing. And this person who is very knowledgeable about horse racing, both in terms of hands-on training horses and also from a boardroom sense, we were talking about licensing, and they said something to the effect of, well, yes, this one organization has a fractional ownership license. You know, that is to help the fractional owners. It's reduced rate for the first year, and it's only that way because that's, you know, to get them involved, to get the fractional owners involved, and to get them to the point where they then become real owners. And my fur stood up on end immediately, and I didn't say anything. But of course, I just carried it around on my shoulders for a couple of weeks, and I thought, you know, this is a very knowledgeable person who I respect, who knows how this industry works, and they don't see the value of these fractional owners. They don't understand the economics. And maybe that's on us. Maybe that's on us that we haven't properly illustrated it to the industry of what value these people are. Certainly from a licensing perspective, this is just one facet, but from a licensing perspective, if you are a licensing agency, if you're the AGCO in Ontario, the licensing authority for harness racing, and you have 30 people that own one horse, they all require licenses versus, you know, one person who owns one horse and requires a license. So you immediately see the economic benefit there. Think about it from a racetrack's perspective. If a horse is racing and 20 people show up to watch the horse race, they're all going to buy programs, they're all going to bet, they're all going to consume food and beverage. They're all going to bring an atmosphere to the track that every track manager desperately wants to fill their quiet and empty grandstands. So there's all of these enormous benefits to fractional ownership, both economically, but also in terms of bringing back some of that spirit that we all feel the industry has lost. So huge economic benefit to fractional ownership, which I think, you know, if I were an organization that is tasked with growing ownership then I, you know, and this is a proven model. So we would love to have some competition. We would love to have more fractional ownership stables pop up and operate in a big way like we do, because it would only benefit the industry.
I want to go back to one thing you said, and well, actually not what you said, but was said to you, that the having the fractional owners become real owners. I can assure you, I've owned as low as 5% of a horse as a quote unquote real owner. You know, some of these people that are involved here, I mean, everybody is, if you're involved even at 1%, those are people that are real owners. Like I don't know. I don't understand that way of thinking, especially when you're trying to get more people involved, and when you're involved, their families are involved, their kids are involved, their friends are involved. There's so much reach that comes even with a real owner, or so, you know, or a fractional owner, that there's no downside. Like I did, the attitude just screams ignorance to me.
Yeah. I think it's prevalent. Like, I think I really do think that there must be a bit of this prevailing attitude. Otherwise, why aren't we pursuing as an industry wholeheartedly this fractional ownership model? Why aren't we pouring resources and energy and money, frankly, into developing this model further? It works. It absolutely works. It's really one of the few things in horse racing over the last couple decades, I would say, that is a real, like, jump up and get in your face example of success. So why aren't we? I think people maybe just don't understand that. I think you've been involved, right? So you understand. It's the same thing as our motto is own a little, love it a lot, which I get, you know, I do occasionally will get pushback from somebody who is like really ingrained in the industry, has been around a long time. And I'll get a little pushback, like, how excited can you get about 1%, you own 1% of a horse, right? It's a different mindset, right? It's coming from a place where they've owned all of the horse and they've been hands-on, all those things, right? So it's just a different mindset. I can assure you that, and I'm sure you can speak to it too, and I know from personal experience, you know, I remember White Tiger, one of the horses that I owned shares of with the stable. I remember, you know, watching him come down the street. And frankly, I'll be honest that I even thought to myself, how excited do you get about 1%? I'll admit that I even thought that. And prior to this race, I think it was like the William Wellwood or something, and he finished. It was a big race, a big stake race at Mohawk. And I think he finished fourth or something. I don't even remember. But it was a big stakes night. The track was packed, and I was watching. I was right along the rail, and I was watching. And I've been around for a long time, so to think that I would get this emotional is quite something. But I remember watching him come down the track, and my heart, I literally have never had my heart feel like that before. It was I did not expect it. It was beating right out of my chest. And I actually said to the stranger beside me, did you hear that? Did you hear my heart pounding?
Oh my.
I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing to say. Afterwards, I felt so stupid once I kind of came down off the adrenaline. But that's literally, and then I understood. Then I got it, which I think is important when you're marketing something, that you actually do understand the effect that it's having on someone. But I think there is some of that old timey time, just misunderstanding of the model and the actual impact that it has.
Yeah.
People get sick of hearing, I think we are such a small industry. People get sick of hearing, also myself, but Anthony also, preaching about, how great this model is and everything. And like over time you can start to tune it out, I suppose, because we've been preaching about it for so long. But it's true. It's absolutely true. It is harness racing always wants like a magic bullet, magic Silver Bullet, Magic Solutions, everything there when it comes to marketing and increasing our fan base and increasing ownership. And of course, there is no such thing, but the closest thing would be this model because it's proven and it really works.
That's a great story. I really like that because I felt that also as being an owner, and there's nothing like when I know this was, oh geez, now it's probably well over 15 years ago, and a few of us got involved as a partnership. But this was even before the stable was a thing, and you know, I owned just a very small percentage of a horse, and to be at the Meadows and to see that horse finish first and stand at the winner's circle, I'm not sure if my smile ever got any bigger in my life, just because you can't replicate that feeling of having a horse race well and you being involved. So, and like Anthony says, it's the cheapest form of entertainment there is, but you can't get that anywhere else. And I've been to Stanley Cup final games. I've been to the highest levels of football games and things like that. And I've never felt the feelings that I felt whenever I was involved with a horse that raced well. So that's the kind of thing that I don't know that until you feel it, like you said, you didn't get it until you felt it. As soon as you do, though, I think it grabs you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really and truly, like you said, how many times in your life will you have that kind of feeling? It's a real, I mean, it is a true commodity. It is truly something of value and a commodity that, you know, that we can sell. It is truly great. I think I just lost my train of thought. This happens sometimes, Mike.
It's okay.
I'm sure it was going to be very profound. All right. Sorry, it's gone.
Well, so we'll talk about a little bit about when you get new horses and you guys acquire new horses, and you say you have 150 horses at the same time. And one thing that I think that there's a stigma like with fractional ownership, especially on the thoroughbred side, that a lot of these horses get marked up and a lot of these places will charge for acquisitions and they charge for a lot of different things, but the stable does no such thing. So let's get into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So so our program obviously is aimed at racing 2 and 3 year olds sort of in their respective stakes series. That's kind of the bread and butter of our program. And then also acquiring aged racehorses for the purpose of racing them in the, you know, the top classes and stake races. So that's basically what we're trying to accomplish. And so we buy most of the yearlings at the major yearling sales. And if you've seen us at those sales, we put out dozens and dozens and dozens of preview videos. Anthony goes down, you know, 4, 5, 6 days in advance and does all his homework. Communicate all of that back to the clients, mostly through video. And then the last couple of years at Harrisburg and Lexington, I believe, Lexington maybe, no, both. We've actually set up a daily live broadcast every day for our clients, like a live stream before the sale starts every day for 3 or 4 days. So again, we're always communicating, right? We're always communicating with the clients and engaging them in the process. Which they love, they devour it. And so when we buy the horses as yearlings, we don't currently mark them up. We don't add a commission. Obviously there's expenses related to yearling sales like shipping and insurance, etc. And we certainly tack that onto the price, but we don't charge commission. We just never have. We make our money from the monthly fees that we charge per percentage of each horse. That's just our model. So I know other places do it differently. For us, this is more transparent, and transparency is, you know, one of our values, something we're always trying to uphold.
Yeah.
So we just don't add on any commissions upfront.
It's constant, the transparency. You talk about the communication. There's so much communication with the stable. And Anthony and his videos, the website is constantly being updated. and you say how much more transparent I'm not sure that anybody could be, because and when you're involved, and I know I've been involved in ownership with other areas, and you might get an update once a week, once a month with the horse that you're involved in, but not with the stable. The stable has constant updating all the time. So what you got, I'm sure your philosophy when it comes to this, and you mentioned it with the sales, but just through the training, the different live training videos, the daily updates from Anthony, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is about communication, and I've luckily just picked up the thread of my lost thought. So that's good. So it is about communication for sure. And like you said, providing constant updates on how the horses are doing. So that includes, you know, the drone live stream that we do for the horses, when they're yearlings becoming 2 year old. There's those live stream drone broadcasts. Luckily Anthony has an extremely talented family. So his brother Curtis is, just a maven of technological resources. He's so smart, in terms of broadcast and technical stuff. So, he started right away doing the drone broadcast. And if you've watched them, they look exactly like a race broadcast. You know, they have the horses, names on the screen and the saddle pads, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a really nice watch, and it's obviously extremely engaging. So you have to also, so it is about communication and being upfront, and it's horse racing. They're horses, not robots. So yes, sometimes there is less than positive news to relay. And Anthony is really good at that. I mean, he is who he is, and he's a straight shooter, and clients appreciate that. And I know that that is probably intimidating for other trainers thinking about, wow, if I have like 100 clients and I have to communicate with them, how am I going to do that? And how am I going to tell them, yeah, no, your horse isn't going to race this year or whatever. But, you know, it's like anything else. You know, you learn to do it. It's a skill you acquire. And maybe everyone doesn't do it exactly the way Anthony McDonald does it, but it is possible to do it. We've proven it. So it is about communication, but it's also about engaging them, right? I mean, so you're engaging them in, you don't want to just let them know how it's going. You want to actually engage them in the process. So watching that horse actually train down every other week, all fall and winter and spring long is a huge benefit. Getting the update videos every week about your horse, is a huge benefit. And you have to engage them to provide a really enriching experience. The more they're engaged, the better it is. And so that engagement might be watching the drone videos, that engagement might be watching Anthony's update videos, that engagement might be, you know, if you live nearby, going and actually seeing the horse. It might be going and watching the race or watching the race via simulcast. So there's lots of avenues of engagement. You just have to make sure that you're actually, you know, providing them and make sure that it's an important part of what you're doing. So, yeah, those, Anthony is a fabulous communicator. And he, again, that's creating videos from his car. People often say, why does he sit in his car to do those videos? But it's really just simplicity and logistics. I mean, a car is a great place to record from because it's contained and the acoustics are good, and generally, you know, there's nothing else happening in there, although generally his family's in the car, so sometimes, you know, you get to see them grow up as well. But you know, that's how he communicates. Somebody else, you know, for me, it's written messages. So everybody communicates differently and engages differently. It's just a matter of doing it and making it a priority. I think that's really the thing, is that the communication and the engagement and the customer care, that's a priority for us. And it has to be. Think about what kind of industry we would have on the whole. If every racetrack and every organization made the customer experience the priority. Customer care is the priority of the operation. I think we'd have a different kind of industry.
I would agree with that.
It's a priority. Yeah.
Absolutely, because and there's a lot of intimidation that goes along with horse racing, and I think Anthony takes a lot of that away just because of the nature of the way he communicates and the fact that, you know, he's there with his family and he tells it like it is all the time. There's no trying to talk around anything. This is the way it is. This is the way it's going to be. And that kind of honesty and that kind of you know, simplicity, I think, is very refreshing, like you said, because he cares about the stable. He cares about the people that own the horses. And some, like you said, some horses aren't going to work out. And that's just the nature of the business. And you let your winners, you know, go and race really well, and everybody enjoys it. And if you have a horse that maybe is not doing so well, then you have to make a decision. But he's very upfront about all of that.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely the best approach. And, you know, he's always been like that. But of course, you know, he's gotten better and refined it and been, you know, more bullish about it. There was definitely times when we probably kept horses around for too long, because well, I remember having a discussion about, like, well, oh my God, we put all this work into engaging these people and they become emotionally connected to these horses, and now we're going to go sell it. So what are we doing there? But I mean, it's a balance, and you're always evolving as a business. Every business is evolving, and you got to kind of grope your way through a few spots, grope around in the dark a little bit until you figure it out. So we're always, you know, we're evolving and shifting, but, you know, the core tenets stay the same, and that is, you know, communication, transparency, engagement. We want to make sure that we ultimately want to make sure that we facilitate that opportunity for someone to, you know, to either have that, like, heart pounding moment, or to have that moment with their parents that, you know, is so special. You know, we help to facilitate that. And the horse delivered it, of course, as they do. But that's what's really important. And another thing I think people, like, really need to understand is, you know, we are always telling people, that's great. You know, we will take your discretionary money, your fund money. You know, we'll take as much of that as you want to provide. But we're happy to take that and provide a service for you with that money. But, you know, don't come invest with us. That's not, you know, that is not what we're selling. Obviously, we try our best to do as well as we possibly can with these horses, to, you know, meet their optimum potential, and realize that and do as well as we can, reaching the winner's circle, et cetera, race them at the top of their game. But at the end of the day, you know, what we're really selling is an experience. So the ROI for us is experiential, not monetary. And most people, again, something that I find, people who have been in the industry for a really long time, have really devoted their life to this, and they have, you know, one way of doing things and one way of thinking about things, they're often surprised, you know, about the monetary aspect of it. As Anthony always says, you know, he's never heard anyone screaming at the top of their lungs when the horse comes down the stretch saying, there's my 1% of $50,000. This is my 1% of $50,000. You know, you never hear that. It's really, we're really aligning people's expectations with what we're providing. And that is, you know, an entertaining and, frankly, emotional experience, emotional engagement, which I think is what horse racing is really all about. I mean, that is really what we're selling anyways.
Absolutely.
When you think about it.
Absolutely. Well, you just finished a round of webinars to get people involved in the stable. Do you have any more planned, anything coming up as far as the webinars?
We do, yes. So we have two open houses coming up. Although I don't have, I'm not 100% sure, so I best not say anything yet, but those will be coming up within the next month or two in both Ohio and Ontario. And yes, our webinars have been going over really well. So this is an opportunity if people are, you know, thinking about fractional ownership and the stable.ca once a month for eternity. Now we will be offering at least one webinar every month. So if you go to our website, stable.ca, and go to the news section, you'll find the list there and you can register for them. So we'll have one, at least one a month going forward. They've been really positive. So.
And I know that if people want to get in touch, I know Anthony answers emails very quickly. You answer emails very quickly. Anthony's email, it's anthony@thestable.ca, and yours is kelly@thestable.ca. So if you want to get involved, you listen to this podcast and say, well, I believe in what they're doing. I want to get involved in this. Certainly can contact both Anthony and yourself or attend one of the webinars and get a lot of information that way.
Yep, for sure. Definitely.
Well, this has been a blast. And I think that you give a lot of insight into the inner workings of the stable and really what you guys are doing and the fact. And a lot of these podcasts have to promote the stable, all the positives that you guys have going on. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks very much, Mike. You're doing a great job with these interviews. Really enjoy them, and our clients really enjoy them too. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and hopefully we can continue this relationship. Thanks for listening to the Harness Players Podcast, and we'll see you next time.